We think, anyway, at this point, that we will follow the order of the itinerary. And so with that, we will open a public hearing on HCR 8. And John Mosley, I think you are scheduled to testify. And welcome.
Thank you. I'm John Mosley. I'm the Vice President for Academic Affairs and Provost, University of Oregon. I'm here to testify in favor of House Concurrent Resolution 8, which is a resolution in memoriam of Paul Olam, a former president of the University of Oregon, who passed away earlier this year. I want to express appreciation to the committee and to the House for considering this, and to the representatives who have sponsored this. President Olam is indeed one of the giants in the history of the University of Oregon. I was privileged to enter the University of Oregon as a physics professor while he was provost, and ultimately to serve as his vice president for research.
Sure.
And among the faculty and supporters of the University of Oregon, President Olam is held in tremendous respect as a man of integrity, as a leader, as a person who helped to bring the University of Oregon through one of the most difficult times in its history. I'm sure that all of you remember the early 80s, which occurred right after I moved to the state, and the very difficult recession that the state as a whole went through, the effects that that had on higher education. President Olam began his presidency right at the front end of that and had that to deal with in the early days. The fact that the University of Oregon emerged from those days not only intact, but a tremendously strong university, member of the Association of American Universities and one of the top research universities in the country, is a tribute to his leadership. In fact, over that period of time, while state funding was decreasing for higher education in general, research funding, largely federal funding for the University of Oregon, more than tripled over the period of his presidency. I've pointed out a minor error in the concurrent resolution itself, which is that President Olam was instrumental in building not only Willamette Hall and Deschutes Hall, but also Cascade Hall and Streisinger Hall. In fact, was responsible for, with the help of the legislature and the federal government, for essentially completely rebuilding the science complex at the University of Oregon, and this played a major role in the growth in research grants and contracts and in the university's stature over that period of time. So on behalf of the University of Oregon, I just want to assure you that the university is not only very strongly supportive of this resolution, but also appreciative of the fact that you're considering it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, Dr. Mosley indicated it was lines 15, I think, on the HCR 8 that you're referencing.
That's correct, yeah. And I've given Representative Barnhart the spelling. Right.
And it's our intention to correct this with an amendment, and we'll bring this back on Thursday in the work session.
Okay.
Any questions or comments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, I just want to say that I'm glad you're doing this. Certainly deserved.
Thank you. Well, very good. Thank you very much
for
your testimony. With that, then, we'll close the public hearing on HCR 8, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2286. And Janet, can you read us a summary, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2286, and you should have dash 3 amendments distributed yesterday. The original bill had appropriations both for ESL and bilingual education programs, a $4 million appropriation, and a $1 million appropriation for tuition reimbursement programs for teachers that go into bilingual or ESL teaching programs. The Dash 3 amendments do establish a teacher tuition grant program through the Department of Education and contain a $1 million appropriation for that program. The amendments do delete the rest of the $4 million appropriation that was for other ESL programs grants. There is a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee on the measure, and should have the -3 amendment.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, we brought the -3 amendments because we had heard testimony, and I think not only in this committee but in other places, that there was a great need for teacher training and or retraining of ESL teachers. This in particular came from Salinas, who is the superintendent in what I think used to be called the Estacada School District, but now it has a different name. I didn't write that down, but the original bill, as you know, was perhaps a $5 million cost for the Oregon Trails. Excellent. The Oregon Trails School District. I had a $5 million cost, and we thought probably that's a bit of a stretch given this this budget climate. And so we thought perhaps a $1 million price tag on this bill, which would be designed to train or retrain ESL teachers. I thought this might be something that we would like to consider. And so the -3s are the result. So does anyone have any observation here, any comment? Representative Smith.
I'm probably going to be inclined to vote no on this because there's been some discussion in this building about English immersion. Whether that'll become a reality this session, I don't know. But if we were to pass this bill and then next session try to implement an English immersion program, as the states of California, who are highly Hispanic, have done, it seems to be very successful. And the state of Arizona is now considering in its beginning stages. That is why I think I'm a no vote on this, Mr. Chair, because to me they're in conflict with each other. To pass one and then do another doesn't make sense. Not that I'm wholly supportive of teachers in acquiring their extra education. I don't want teachers to think this is a vote against them, because it is not. I just think if we're going to be successful in educating people who come from a different language, we all need to be speaking the same words. That's what it boils down to. And I think that's a very, to me, the most sensible thing that has come out of all this. So that's why I'm at on it.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll vote yes for exactly the opposite reasons. Because I guess I don't support the English immersion. I've had visitors in my office who have had a lot of experience with trying to make the transition into English, and it's hard enough to understand the subject matter if you don't understand the language. And so I support this bill. I think this would help solve that problem, and so I will vote yes on this.
Mr. Chair,
do we need to move? Did we move the twos?
I think
we're
moving the three. Yeah,
okay, well,
we haven't moved anything yet, but
okay,
the three is what we're.
I would move the -3.
Okay, Representative Morissette moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2286. Representative Nelson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think consistently throughout this session we've heard of the shortage of teachers in this area, and so I'm certainly supportive of this program. I'm sorry we couldn't give them the whole $5 million, and I think we've been very reasonable and cost effectively excellent in at least getting them $1 million, so I'm with you.
Representative Nelson, that's one of the nicest compliments we've had. To be called reasonable is quite a compliment, I must say. Representative Hobson, you have a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These aren't totally limited to the -3s, but if you want, I'll go ahead and speak to that. And I would speak to it with a cross and agreeing with both of my colleagues on the right. I believe in immersion programs. I've seen them work well. I believe in bilingual ESL programs. I've seen them work well. And I think the whole point here is that individual schools, individual teachers have to do what works best for their particular situation. I'm going to be opposed to this bill for what probably is a little different reason, and one that you'll hear me say over and over again, I think, before we're out of here. I am so supportive of the $5.2 billion for education and the careful way that that has been crafted with all the parties involved, getting the issues that they feel are very, very important included within that $5.2 billion, that I'm not willing to carve out a piece of anything. And I realize the money comes from someplace else, but to address a specific problem. Because I could argue just as strongly for a number of other programs and types of kids. The other piece in this, at this point, there is additional money coming in Title I-C that can be distributed in some manner, and districts themselves can look at how to go ahead with this training, because I certainly agree with my colleague here to the left that there is a dire need. But it's not just for these kinds of teachers. There's a need for technology, math, science, all those kinds of things. So again, it's a case of we're splitting off one little piece and we're making a decision on that, and I don't think that's the way it should be run. So I will be voting against it for all of the above and below.
Representative Barnhart.
I'm going to support the dash threes as it reduces the cost of the bill.
Okay. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm delighted that we're having this discussion.
Good.
I think it's very important for us among the committee to have a discussion about different aspects of how to provide support for our K through 12 schools. And I think it's fine that we have disagreements. There are reasons that there are several of us on this committee, and it's because we have different perspectives. We represent different parts of the state. We represent different types of districts, and those perspectives need to come out. Having said all that, I support the dash threes and I support the bill on the premise that this is in addition to and not in lieu of other funding. I absolutely concur with my good friend from Tillamook that 5.2 is the minimum that this state can responsibly provide to our local school district to achieve what we are asking them to achieve for our K through 12 students. It's consistent with the quality education model. It gets us started on the right track for implementing that, and it's our responsibility to do that. We have throughout the session heard bills that propose augmentations of that, both financially and programmatically, and I believe this bill does just that. I think it's very supportive of our strong emphasis on early reading because it provides opportunity for kids who really need the extra support at that critical time when they're learning how to read and decipher how you put words that you hear verbally into funny little symbols on a piece of paper. So I'm supportive of the dash threes, and I'm very appreciative that the bill has come to us so that we can consider it.
I guess I'll weigh in very briefly. It's kind of interesting when we consider this or any other bill that we consider where we are now and where we might conceivably go in the future, as has been pointed out. And so I guess the reality for me is this program, by ESL reading programs and ESL in general, have been with us for a time, and I see them continuing, I guess, and I do see the need for teacher training and or retraining. So I think I'm definitely going to be supportive of this amendment and this bill. We have a motion to adopt the dash threes. Any further discussion? Any objections? Dash threes are moved into House Bill 2286. I'd entertain a motion to move 2286 with the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move 2286 to Ways and Means with the amendment.
Representative Morissette.
Do pass.
Pass recommendation. Excuse me. Very good. Representative Morissette moves House Bill 2286 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Paula, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nolan?
Aye.
Jeff?
No.
Excuse?
Bonner?
No.
Barnhart?
Aye.
Popcorn?
No.
Trevathan?
Aye. And what's the total here? Okay. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2598 as amended moves to the Ways and Means Committee. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2286. We've had a change in the order. We've had a request to delay House Bill 2598. And so because of that, we will honor that request. We will move into a work session on House Bill 3278. Janet, when you can gather your folders, we'll proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3278 is the bill that was held over from last week that deals with intellectual property and consultation ability by community college instructors. You have at your, that were distributed yesterday, the Dash 2 amendments. They changed the authority in the measure from having the State Board of Education develop the rules and conflict of interest notification kinds of procedures for this measure to the Board of Education of each community college district. The amendments also specify that the policies and rules be in accordance with collective bargaining agreements, and they delete a provision on the second page of the bill at the very end, the last two lines, that rules have to be consistent with practices of the Board of Education. The Board of Higher Education. And those were the amendments that were discussed at the last meeting, and we needed to get them drawn up and combined. And there is no fiscal impact on the measure.
So we're considering the Dash 2s?
Yes.
And we have not moved any amendment to this point. Is that correct?
That's correct. I would move the Dash 2s.
Representative Morissette moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3278. Discussion? Any objection? So moved. Representative Morissette, do you have another motion?
Well, I would move House Bill 3278 as amended to floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Representative Morissette moves House Bill 3278 as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation. Discussion? Paula, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Nolan?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Starr?
Excuse?
Bonner?
Aye.
Barnhart?
Aye.
Popcorn?
Aye.
Morissette?
Aye.
Trevathan?
Chair votes aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 3278 moves to the floor. And Representative Starr is the sponsor of this bill. Perhaps we should assign him to be the carrier.
I bet he'd appreciate that.
Very good. I would agree.
Mr. Chair, who was the carrier for the last bill?
It went to Ways and Means. Yeah, so we didn't have a carrier. Okay. With that, then, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3278. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2015. Janet, are you ready for our summary?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2015. The original bill was the 177-page version, and it would have abolished the State Board of Higher Education and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission and transferred the powers and duties of those two boards, as well as the State Board of Education related to community colleges, to a new college opportunity board, and made conforming changes to those to the statute. You have distributed yesterday the House Bill 2015-1 amendments, and you should have a revised staff measure summary. It's white, but a revised one. But there was a, I got all mixed up on the background, and needed to revise the staff manual summary. The amendments replace the original bill and create a post-secondary education opportunities commission to assist the governor in developing a comprehensive post-secondary budget and to make recommendations regarding institutional autonomy and the governance among the state institutions of higher education and among community colleges. There is also created an Office of Post-Secondary Education Policy in the Office of the Governor to help develop options for the budget and to establish guidelines for distributing funds among the institutions. There are additional elements of the bill that Harvey Matthews may want to speak to and details. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Harvey, looks like you're pouring over your notes. Perhaps you should
Chair.
The public. Yes.
Mr. Chair, who brought the amendments forward?
The Speaker's office.
Thank you.
Brought those forward.
Good morning, Chair Backlund. My name is Harvey Matthews. I work with Speaker Mark Simmons as his legislative director. These amendments were developed by a work group made up of Cam Royce-Brawley, Joe Cox, Gary Ann Dean, Jeff Sweetser from the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, various board members of the Higher Education Board, and Duncan Wise. So they've been a process. The first bill, as you may have seen, is pretty thick and kind of scared people with its all-encompassing nature, and we cut it back quite a bit, as you'll see by the proposed amendment in front of you. This bill attempts to deal with a current problem in higher education. Currently, we have three budgets for higher education dealing with the university system, community colleges, and student assistance. And from the speaker's vantage point, there's a lack of a cohesive statewide strategy for post-secondary education. Our current method of disbursement of funds is divide them out as you guys hear the needs, and that creates winners and losers. I think last session is still pretty fresh in our mind, and we gave a lot to the university system, and community colleges got a bit, and student assistance was sort of an afterthought. And because each session brings forth new ideas, whoever's ideas are the most compelling, of course, gets the money. And what this attempts to do is solve that problem. We want to have more opportunity for students to access higher education. This is directing the governor to establish a budget that looks at the continuum of post-secondary education and develop a budget that will create more opportunity for students. So 2015, I think, is a solution to the problem of a divided budget that creates a non-comprehensive post-educational strategy. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this point.
Right, thank you, Harvey.
Question.
Representative Smith, and then Representative Nelson.
So when we're going to fund these interests, who then decides how much money goes to community colleges, the scholarship program, et cetera? How is that determination made?
Chair Backlund, Representative Smith. Currently, the governor proposes a budget. He proposes three different budgets for these three organizations, and this would only direct the governor to create one budget. You would still have the oversight for the disbursement of funds.
So our Ways and Means Committee would consider requests from community colleges, for instance. They have a $45 million enrollment package they'd like. They'd still be able to request that within this budget. The Ways and Means still would be divvying out money, so to speak.
Yes, Chair Backlund, Representative Smith. The current Ways and Means oversight would still be addressed. Community colleges would have an opportunity to work with the university system and student assistance in comprehensively putting their budget together. They, in effect, have two opportunities to request, in this example, tuition funding.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Matthews, since I don't know who the people were, you mentioned, maybe if somebody else did, but who were the representatives in this committee by category?
Well, they're Chair Backlund, Representative Nelson, Campro Sprawley from Community College Commission, Workforce, Cam, if you're here, I'm sorry. Joe Cox from the university system, Gary Ann Dean from Independent Colleges, Jeff Sweetser from Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and Duncan Weiss from the Oregon Business Council. And there were some board members, Tom Hymason, I believe, from the Higher Education Board. Sir?
Thank you.
I'm forgetting some people as
well. That's okay. I just was not familiar with those names. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
And who brought this request?
Chair Backlund, Representative Nelson, the Dash 1 amendments, to clarify that request, or?
We can start there.
Okay. This was from the Speaker's office originally.
And follow up, Mr. Chair, and the request for the bill, for the action, came from?
I believe it was Chair Backlund, Representative Nelson. Originally, I think it came from frustration from last session, dealing with three different budgets and especially with the Student Assistance Commission budget coming in last and not having as much money to put towards, having these students that need assistance so badly to give them a leg up. Most of the money for post-secondary education was granted to university system and community colleges. So, a sense of frustration from that, the Oregon Business Council did write up an interesting playbook, which you may have gotten at the beginning of the session, which details a similar idea. And so the marriage of those two, one frustration, one idea, kind of amalgamated into House Bill 2015.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, as I understand this correctly, this would have been Mr. Switzer on behalf of the student assistants and Mr. Weiss on behalf of the Oregon Business Council who brought this measure forward.
Representative Backlund.
To the Speaker.
No, Representative Backlund and Representative Nelson, it was not Mr. Switzer, and it was partly the document of Duncan Wise's Business Council. It was mostly a speaker's personal experience.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you. And could you tell me the absolute primary purpose of this bill?
Yes. Chair Backlund, Representative Nelson, the goal of the bill is to create a comprehensive statewide budget so that you, the legislature, can strategically design how you want post-secondary education to be developed in Oregon. So you can get your arms around it and not just budget for three separate items, but to feel like you are accomplishing a greater goal of developing a strategy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to address the questions that asked. Last session, there was a lot of frustration, and I wrote a letter to the governor urging that he do exactly that, do a continuum of funding, look at all three before making a decision. I did serve in the interim Student Financial Aid Committee that the governor appointed, and there were four of those legislators. The first thing I asked the governor was, are you going to give any more money for the financial aid? And he said, no. We struggled with the financial aid piece. Nothing really happened. There were a lot of good ideas put out. But I also thought it was a great idea to develop a quality education model for higher ed and another one for the community colleges. And I have two bills which I will speak to that do exactly that.
So I think we're all moving in the same direction, and we're addressing a need that does exist to coordinate and make sense out of the way that we fund higher ed, and we need to have some advocates for that. So I will be really interested in hearing the other testimony to see if this is the right mechanism to do that. It may be, and we'll as we hear the testimony, but there was a lot of frustration. This has been an effort that has been made by several groups, and I think we're moving in the right direction.
Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you.
Grant and Cairns?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Grant and Cairns, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon University System. We are representing Chancellor Joe Cox this morning, who apologizes to you for not being present. He is on his way to Washington, D.C. He has a conference with Secretary Page of the Department of Education. I'm going to visit with him about our PASS program, which has been so successful, assessment and accountability measures, and the other elements of the Oregon University System's reengineering. He apologizes for not being here, but the timing of the of that visit and posting this bill, unable to be here. Mr. Matthews is correct. The Chancellor was involved in each of the work group meetings which have been held regarding House Bill 2015 and has, I think, politely and very directly stated that the Oregon University System is not seeking a combination of budgets into a uniform bill and opening the issue of governance and restructuring into some kind of a super board. He's made that fairly clear, and I want to state for the record today that that is the position of the Oregon University System. We understand the frustration that centers around post-secondary education, public post-secondary education in Oregon. We share that frustration, but fail to see why taking three relatively underfunded public post-secondary education entities, combining them into a single underfunded budget, and then having a system of perpetual disequilibrium among the elements over the division of that underfunded budget will lead to improvement in service to Oregon. Especially fail to understand that when, in fact, to accomplish that goal, you need to create two new levels of bureaucracy in the post-secondary education administration, creating first in the 2015-1 amendments the Office of Public Post-Secondary Education Policy in the Governor's Office, with an executive director, and as I read the amendments, employing such personnel as needed, so creating a new level between the governor and the boards that he appoints, followed by a post-secondary education opportunity commission, yet another level of bureaucracy standing between the governor and the boards that he appoints, which would, of course, have to employ personnel of its own, and then, according to amendments, call upon these commissions, both the Board of Education and the Board of Higher Education and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which are underfunded, for additional support to that new commission. And between them, in this scheme of bureaucratic overburden, determine how to allot the relative scarcity of funds for those we are really have a hard time understanding what would be accomplished if you look at Section 6, Sub 4, Paragraph B of the Dash 2 amendments and try and figure out
Grattan, we only have the Dash 1, don't we?
I mean, did I say Dash 2? I meant Dash 1. Dash 1 amendment.
Threw us into a tizzy there for a second.
Sorry about that. Another bill this afternoon. dash one amendments, page four, line 17.
Sure.
This new commission will take up powers now vested in the Board of Education, Board of Higher Education, and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And I quote, establish guidelines for distributing funds to appropriate agencies and individual institutions, end quote. That is an extraordinary amount of power poured into a single sentence of a state statute. But it, on horses, the Board of Education, the Board of Higher Education, and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, by drawing up from them to a new commission under the direction of a new education policy office, the distributions of funds to appropriate agencies and individual institutions. And so I would ask, on behalf of the Chancellor, what is broken in the present arrangement that we need such a dramatic fix, and one which, if we were stepped into, might find ourselves sinking well below water in a very deep sinkhole? Let me stop there and say there is nothing in statute now to prevent the governor, whether he or she wishes to direct a complementary budget for these agencies. All three of these agency budgets are contained in the budget she or he puts forward. That power is very strong. These are commissions appointed by that governor. Do we need to create two new intermediary levels of educational bureaucracy in order to achieve something that is now vested in the office of the governor and a unified gubernatorial budget? I'd like to finish up, Mr. Chairman, by saying that we are deeply concerned about the issue of governance. You are setting aside a 177-page bill which has at its heart the creation of a new scheme of governance for Oregon post-secondary education. That's not in this bill, except that the door is propped open to it. Yes, people were scared of that 177-page bill. We are just as concerned over dash one amendments, page three, subs two and three, and section five, where what is taken out of the bill is now the door is opened up to examine that during the interim. So all that you may not like in the printed bill is available to this commission in the interim and beyond in order to create. Mr. Chairman and members, the university system has just completed a decade of reengineering, which is, in the United States of America, outstanding. Beginning with the 2010 Advisory Commission Vision for Higher Education, it's not a bill number, but the year 2010, visioning where higher education, public post-secondary education will be in Oregon in the year 2010, setting a roadmap to accomplish that, and doing it through a number of steps. First, with Senate Bill 271, the Higher Education Administrative Efficiency Act, making our business very efficient and very entrepreneurial. Senate Bill 919, which in statute gave the first state agency the first performance and assessment goals in the state of Oregon, in which we came to you and partnered with you in accomplishing that. Following on that, the adoption of a resource allocation model, which creates a new, much more autonomous system of very entrepreneurial post-secondary education institutions. And to quote the board president, Mr. Don Van Louvenay, our board was also president of Electro Scientific Industries and also a member of the Oregon Business Council Board, said, the problem that we need to fix is the allocation of public resources to very lean and efficient and customer-focused post-secondary system, not layer it with new levels of oversight, administration, and democracy. throw everything into a common pot and then let a perpetual biennial discussion involve you over how to accomplish the division of it. And just a little history lesson, because as a history major, before I went wrong somewhere along the line, have to remember that very often everything that we suggest has been looked at in the past. We have a Board of Higher Education and a Office of the Chancellor, because in the years leading up to their creation, this body, the legislature, found itself on the receiving end of an hellacious amount of lobbying, log rolling, combinations, and other kinds of things, seeking separate appropriations for separate institutions. This legislature finally said, enough, and created a Board of Education. When the log rolling, the combinations, and the self-aggrandizement continued, they created the Chancellor's Office. And they wrote into law 351.110, relationship with the legislature. All relationships and negotiations between the state legislature and its various committees and the institutions of higher education shall be carried on through the Department of Higher Education. No subordinate official representing any of the separate institutions shall appear before the legislature or any committee, except upon the written authority of the State Board of Higher Education. Put a stop to it, and we haven't used that in years and years and years and years and years. But if you want to find out what it was like prior to the creation of the Office of the Chancellor and the State Board and the rationalization of the administration of your seven institutions of post-secondary education, open the door to governance. Try a new scheme that's been tried before, where we came from 70 years ago. Relearn the history. I would suggest you don't really want to go there. And instead, we ought to say, Governor, won't you please put forward a rationalized and coordinated post-secondary education budget among these three entities and keep a good working system working without running across all of the jurisdictional lines, not just in the university system, but I think you're going to hear in the community colleges, and accomplish probably more trouble than it's worth. But the voice of history, and we have a new idea which has been tried before, and maybe we'll see whether it works this time. Mr. Chairman, answer any questions you might have.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Granton, there is a bill, House Bill 3803. That would create a quality higher education commission to take a comprehensive look at the needs of higher ed in general. It would establish a advocacy group that would then come to the legislature and make a case for the needs of higher ed, much as the quality education model for K-12 and another thing would do the same for community colleges. Is that something that you can support?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morissette, yes, I think that would be most helpful. Speaking for myself as an agent of the university system, having cleared this with the Chancellor of the Board, it would be most helpful to have that kind of an examination and recommendation. But we don't need to go to governance as much as we need to go to what is the goals of the system, how do we accomplish them, and tease out the need that way, as opposed to saying in advance what the solution is and then applying it whether there's a problem or not. Yes, I would go farther and say it would be nice to have explicit as opposed to implicit in the ballot measure one, which was adopted last year, clear statement that a uniform system of public post-secondary institutions is an obligation of this body, too. Then we'd have equal footing and say that in a modern world, pre-K to post-grad is a system that shall be seamless, complementary, and cooperative, and achieve public goals. That would be most helpful.
Next question.
Representative Smith.
Pardon me. Page 4, line 3. It says, commission shall present to the 73rd Legislative Assembly. That's two bienniums from now, correct? This is the 71st. Why do we need 4 years for that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Smith, I don't know. I've got to say that the university system, having just put a capstone of resource allocation model on top of a completely re-engineered system of public higher education, not interested in going out and then over the next 4 years spending the dollars necessary to go and see whether we got it right or replace it. And what we need to do is look at how is it funded and how is it funded in relationship to community colleges and student assistance. The Student Assistance Commission is underfunded. We collapsed in terms of the percentage of the tuition grant covers. We have 11,000 students who have no grant who qualify. Community colleges are now united around having the dollars follow the student. And a funding model which, while not an entitlement, more nearly approaches their needs. We applaud that, support it. The university system has adopted a student-centered model for funding. But all three of them are underfunded. Governance doesn't fix funding. Governance adds cost and pushes out into the future the issue of how you're going to do it. So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, I have no idea.
Representative Smith, perhaps Harvey.
Thank you,
can answer
Chair.
That question.
Chair Backlund, Representative Smith, the
Harvey, would you state your name?
Harvey Matthews, please? From the Speaker's office.
Thank you.
The thinking was that if a budget was made for next session, this group would come together in the interim, this interim, the budget would have one 2 year cycle to work through, and then any recommendations for any governance changes should be made after that budget has been worked through completely. That's my line. Now, Mr. Grattan Kearns, I would have said, if I were you, that it would take that long to reach through two levels of this bureaucracy scheme. But I'm stepping on your toes there. Sorry.
Works for me, Mr. Chairman.
I have follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And I will ask this of the community college people, too. Line 4. Page 4, line 17, it talks about guidelines for distributing funds to appropriate agencies. What does that do to the autonomy, for instance, of the community college association, the higher education, the scholarship commission? I see those as very different and distinct entities, and I like the individualism. If we're going to create something that puts these together, can you answer that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, that is a deep concern. We have a relatively autonomous set of campuses, and I read that to say that some new interposed commission will be making decisions about allocations to institutions. That is extraordinarily chilling to the institutions, and I think you're going to hear directly from the community colleges regarding that thing.
And I will ask that question of them, too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kearns. I want to be sure that I understand what you've just said. have you said that the seven-state university system is not for House Bill 2015?
Chairman and Representative Nelson, either in the printed form or the dash one form, that is correct.
Okay, but on 2015, the seven institutions would vote no on 2015. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, that is correct.
And on 2015-1 amendment, what would the seven universities vote?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, it would be the same, following the lead of the board leadership and the chancellor relative to the issue.
So that is a no.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Andrea Henderson, Andrea, you had a panel to accompany you.
Ever since measuring my past, we've been unfunded and we don't have a solution.
Whoever would like to begin? Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And I'm here today representing the 17 community colleges in Oregon and the official position of the Oregon Community College Association. I wanted to start out by thanking the speaker for his interest in education in Oregon and his concern over the funding system for education in Oregon. And we agree that that is a system that needs to be looked at. However, we are concerned with the direction that this bill is going. I've got with me today two board members from our community colleges, both Marilyn Krauser from the Shemeketa Community College Board, Michael Rose from the Lane Community College Board, and Jerry Berger, from president of Shemeketa Community College. And I'm going to make a couple of brief comments regarding our position and let them tell you far more about community colleges and the impact this would have on community colleges. Essentially, we are concerned with the direction of this bill and its impact on the local control of community colleges. One of the community colleges currently are ranked the number one institutions that state services that they provide. And we believe that a lot of that is because of the local control of community colleges, because community colleges are very responsive to the needs of their local communities. And we are concerned with the direction of this bill and the creation of a commission that would determine different types of categorical funding for education and would also distribute the money out to community colleges. And our concern is that that would impact the ability of local community colleges to make decisions in terms of how money should be spent on their campuses and to meet the needs of their communities. We are very happy to continue conversations with the speaker and any other party that would like to talk about for secondary education in Oregon, but we do remain concerned with the direction of this bill. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Marilyn Krauser, who is a board member from Shemeketa Community College and past president of the Oregon Community College Association.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the committee. My name is Marilyn Krauser. I have been a member of the Shemeketa Community College representing Yamhill County since 1988. And during my tenure, I have become increasingly convinced that local control is critical to fulfilling the mission of community colleges. I am opposed to Measure House Bill 2015 because I believe it would erode the local control in budgetary matters and keep us from being responsive to our local communities. By law, Shemeketa is a local institution that is required to meet the needs of the people who live around our local area. That's why the college is governed by seven board members who are elected from within that college district. We know our communities, we care about our communities, and we are accountable to our communities. We run into our constituents every day. We see them in the grocery store, at school events, in our businesses, and in other places in the community. We want to meet the needs of our constituents because they know us and they hold us accountable. In addition to our informal contact, We also meet with them frequently with our local businesses and other leaders on a more formal basis. We have a large number of advisory committees made up of local business owners and others. The Chemeketa Advisory Committee list is almost as fat as this original bill. Those committees and various other groups make formal recommendations to the board, and together we help develop the needs of our local community. The needs of our local community are very primary when it comes to developing our college budget. I'm afraid that under House Bill 2015, budget decisions will be made by a commission that may not include anyone from our local area. I understand that the sponsors of the bill do not intend to micromanage our college budget. However, even broad budgetary decisions made at the statewide level have a huge impact at the local level and could restrict our flexibility. Oregon's community colleges have a great reputation for being responsive and responding quickly to the needs of our local community. As an example, Chemeketa Community College is now working with former employees of the Agra Frozen plant, which is recently closed. We move staff from our campus over to that plant to counsel and advise them. We have also modified the starting of our classes so that they can start immediately and don't have to wait for a new term. That's what we mean by being flexible. I believe that we earn that reputation because we are locally governed and locally focused. Please allow the locally elected board members to continue serving Oregon and serving their communities, and I would urge you not to pass House Bill 2015. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
My name is Michael Rose. I represent Lane Community College Board. And after 30 years of working at a community college and now serving on the board, I'm convinced more than ever the importance that the local autonomy and the governance issue that Grant talked about, how important that is to the college and its ability to serve its mission. I'd remind you that the state mandate says the community colleges must serve the local communities, and we have a broader mandate than the university system does. And I would call your attention to that. My major concern as I look at this particular bill is that at a time we're trying to create more cooperation between the university system and the community college system, that this would actually cause more conflict between the two levels of higher education. I am deeply concerned about funding issues, and I don't, you know, I certainly understand the desire for more efficiency in higher education overall. However, I'm not sure when I listen to the testimony that says, you know, you're still going to have the Ways and Means Committee dealing with three different budgets, how that's going to create more efficiency. I think you're going to create more conflict and more turmoil. So I would urge you to oppose 2015. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman Backlund, members of the committee. I'd like to start my remarks by taking the advantage of the fact that I came here today and I looked in the back of the room and I saw all kinds of people, and I realized that Dr. Kathy White and students from her class from Chemeketa Community College Schools and Society are here today to observe how policy is made at the legislature and to learn and observe of how it operates. So if I could, I'd like to introduce them. They could stand up, and
please.
It was just by happenstance too. It wasn't planned.
All right. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gonna be on good behavior.
And we plan to give you a report on what they observed and what they learned today. Coming last on this panel, it's easy to sum up, and some of the things I was going to say has already been highlighted, so I won't bore you with the same things over and over. But as all of you may be aware, community colleges are very comprehensive, and over 50% of our mission, probably closer to 55% of our mission, doesn't specifically relate to, quote, the university system. Major emphasis on professional technical training, which is 1- and 2-year degrees that prepare people for the world of work. Also, a major part of our mission
is adult basic education, basic literacy, ESL, and those types of activities. So when you look at comprehensive community colleges and universities, we have a different mission and a different focus. As the board members articulately said, we are local institutions, and we respond to local needs. In regards to budget, each of the 17 community colleges are mandated in preparation of a budget that the 7 elected board members and 7 appointed citizens serve on local budget committees. That's 17 local budget committees that review in detail what is going to be accomplished with the dollars, what tuition and fees are set, what parts of our mission should we focus upon, what things do we do or not do, and they do that on a yearly basis and give the administration of the college direction as how dollars should be spent, on what they should focus, and they review that on an annual basis. Obviously, the ratings, Oregon Progress Board, community colleges are extremely well respected. People like what they are getting, and they feel that they have a voice, a choice, and can give us direction on a daily basis. If improvements are needed in our governance system, I would urge you to look at the current system and the current structure, and if this does become a major issue, community colleges surely would like to be involved in that process and not just kind of being, oh, by the way, there's some things going here. But if anything does occur, we need to be involved at the beginning of the process, and we need to get our local elected officials involved and college staff to review that before we go any further with this type of initiative. Thank you for the opportunity.
Representative Morissette.
Andrea, a question for you. We met earlier in the session to talk about a quality education model for community colleges. Would you support that concept?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, we would be happy to engage in any conversations regarding community colleges and the mission. And community colleges pride themselves on being very innovative and responsive to change. And we would welcome any opportunity to talk about the role of community colleges and how we can improve them.
Representative Smith and then Representative Barnhart.
Yeah, Mr. Berger, what would this bill do to the autonomy of Chemeca Community College?
Reading the bill, I believe it could have great impact on the present autonomy that Chemeca Community College.
How?
The commission perhaps could direct you on how the money should be spent, on what programs it should be spent, which now is a local decision. It perhaps could tell you what staffing levels and what areas, and right now those are the purview of the local board to give direction to those issues.
Probably, in fact, we really don't know what this commission could tell you because it's not outlined in the bill. Would that be correct?
I believe that is correct. Representative Berkland, Representative Smith, I believe that is correct.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had the privilege of sitting in on some of the meetings of the Education Subcommittee of the Ways and Means Committee while some of you who were at the table were presenting your budget or portions of your budget and the programs that you operate now. And I have to tell you that even though I thought I understood what community colleges do, I really didn't. In fact, you have enormously broad programs. My sense of community colleges is that they are enormously entrepreneurial in the sense that they look at local needs, they connect with local businesses, and work to develop programs that are needed in the local communities for the well-being of our citizens, our economy, and our workers. But it strikes me that that is an enormously different mission than the one that we've given to the seven institutions in the Oregon University system.
And that, I mean, many of those are, have statewide, many departments have statewide implications. We have one law school and one medical school, for example, in different institutions. Your comment on how, if you agree with what I just said, for one thing, and also if you do, what implications does this bill have for those very, very different, apparently very different missions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I would certainly agree with your statement that the community colleges are very comprehensive in their nature, and their programs can be very different from community college to community college as they meet the needs of that community. And frankly, that is one of our concerns in this bill, because we are so locally focused, that we do have different programs. Some community colleges may have the same program because that's the need of that individual community. Other community colleges will have unique programs to meet the needs of their community. So our fear is that any type of mandates from the state level in terms of what type of services we would provide would have a detrimental impact on that local ability to make decisions.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you, members of our Community College Association, for being here. President Berger, how long have you been associated with Chemeketa?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I've been with Chemeketa Community College since 1974.
Mr. Berger, who was the representative of your college on in this plan to develop this prototype of House Bill 2015?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, to my knowledge, no one from the Chemeketa Community College Committee was involved in the development of 2015.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And how many organizations